This is Sign Language with Bruce Williams and Doc Goldstein.
Hi, and welcome to episode 177 of Sign Language. There's a Facebook group that I'm part of called Voiceover Artist and Booth Building. And it's run by an acoustician by the name of John Brandt. And John's based in Jakarta in Indonesia. And I reached out to him and said, would you be interested in coming on the podcast and have a bit of a chat about acoustics? And he was very generous and said, sure, why not? So, John Brandt, welcome to Sign Language.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here.
So tell us a little bit about your background. In a nutshell, what's your career path been to this point?
It's a long one. It went around in circles a lot. Backtracked. Okay. Went up a tree, down a hole.
So where did it start?
Oh, my goodness. It started in the car when I was a little kid, singing with my brothers and sisters.
Yeah, right.
And my mother sent me off to play piano when I was five, kindergarten age, I took piano lessons until I was about 12, 13. And then I picked up the guitar and wanted to be a rock star, all that, the usual stuff. And I got a chance to work with Jeremy Spencer, ex-Fleetwood Mac member.
Right.
Sly Guitar, Oh Well, and Shake Your Money Maker, those songs. And I still know Jeremy today. He's living in Ireland. And that was a very interesting experience. I was his guitar roadie. And so I was very young. Just to make a long story short, that kicked me off, and I worked with a lot of other bands and graduated to the soundboard and monitor mixing, then the main mix, and then I really got the studio bug. And when was that? 76, I think?
Right.
I think it was 1976.
Yeah.
Went into studio work at Bobby Solo Studio in Laurentina, Italy.
Oh, okay.
And on an album for a local band there. It was part local Italians and some Americans and me, and touring and just doing what we could do in Europe.
Yeah.
It was hippie days,
Right.
And then I went to Greece and bummed out. I mean, bummed around. I wasn't bummed out. I was always happy.
Yeah.
I met my first wife. She was British, and went to England and did the club scene there and bummed around. I met Rick Grech. He played bass for Blind Faith. Eric Clapton.
Oh, okay.
We would bum around and go to pubs and busk and have a just blast,
Okay.
Poor Rick died a few years later. He was pretty messed up.
Yeah, right.
But really, what a character. And I suppose a lot of my clients think I'm a character too. But I've done everything from winding cables and roadie and clean up to packing trucks and then I studied electronics on my own and I began building devices. I ended up building stuff for Paul Simon and Billy Gibbons and Mark O'Connor and a whole bunch of people.
Wow.
And I did a lot of custom gear for studios in Nashville.
And you were completely self-taught on the electronics front?
Yeah. Well, I had some mentors, I worked with some people, and I ask questions. That's the best thing to do, when you're in a business, ask questions. Nobody's going to think you're stupid for asking questions. They're going to know you're stupid if you don't ask questions and you go try to do something.
That's right.
So, yeah, ask questions, make friends, and ask the hard ones,
And I'm guessing this was all pre the internet, so it wasn't like you could Google an answer.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, baby, yeah. Yeah.
Other studio work? Did you spend much time recording?
Yeah, lots of time recording. Ended up in Paris, and I did a two-track recording at Jeremy's practice once, and that's really what kicked it off. Then I worked in a Bobby Solo studio, that MCI 416. It was a 416.
Okay.
And an MCI JH-100 transport. JH 16 track, 16 machine, 2-inch. Those are horrible machines. No, I mean, serious. They're horrible to work on. They're real cantankerous, but they really sounded great. They really were marvelous. Kind of like the old Ampex MM 1000 or 1100.
Okay.
Worked on hundreds of machines in Nashville and consoles, and from MCIs to Neves to Tridents and all kinds of stuff.
So were you working for a particular studio in Nashville, or were you just freelancing?
No, I was freelance. And when I was in Nashville, I was one of the top three techs there during the early 90s.
Right.
I was going through a tortuous marriage at the time.
Right.
So, you know, when you don't have the right partner, you do not accomplish nearly any of your dreams, just about. I was a real hard pusher, so I did fairly well, but I finally just... we had a house fire in 96. Yeah, in 96, we have a house fire, and we lost everything. We didn't lose any body, but we lost everything else.
Yeah, right.
And so I just kind of, looking back on it, I think I had a nervous breakdown. I went to Montana and wanted to live in the woods.
Wow.
But it only lasted for a few months. And that's when I started contracting. I started doing contractor work. I was working with a friend of mine. We built log houses, and I'm serious log homes. I mean, talk about estate things, huge. And I got damn good at it. One foundation I poured was so square, we took a diagonal measurement. It was only an eighth of an inch off.
Wow, that's nice.
I mean, it was a huge place. Forget how many square feet that thing was.
Right.
But, you know, that's not too shabby.
Yeah.
And I learned a whole lot. Of course, I already knew electronics, so electrics was pretty easy for me to grasp. Yeah. And at that time in the States, you could wire your own stuff, or if you knew the inspector, you could wire it up and have him come in and check it. So double check if I need to change anything, I'll do that.
Yeah, right.
You don't have to be, you know. And so I learned electrical and plumbing and you name it, roofing. And so that helped me with what I do now.
Not only
the recording, the mixing, the producing, the knowledge of all the equipment, how it all fits together, the wiring process, how it was done, how it's being done, and how it should be done, all three different things.
Nice. At what point did you start to develop an interest in the actual acoustics of a room?
Oh, way back in Nashville. When I was working with Byron Gallimore, he was Tim McGraw and Faith Hill's producer.
Right.
And he was coaching vocals then, and that's what he did mainly. He did the vocals for many of the top hits at the time.
Yeah.
He was damn good at what he did, and he had a writer's group, and he was a songwriter as well.
Yeah.
And I helped him with acoustics in his studio, and when you start off, you do a lot of things wrong, but you learn.
Yeah.
You know, it's the only way you learn. You do it, you try, oh, yeah, that doesn't work. I won't do that again.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
So it's pretty cool. And the more and more I learned, the more I realized, well, I can use it. It's very much like electronics in a way. The physics of air and walls and different masses and stuff, and they all have that similar formulas, you know? It's the phase angles. It's very similar, and when I design acoustic treatment, I design it for impedance. And you do impedance calculations, you look at it, and the flow is so much better when you do that rather than just kind of trying to throw something up.
Now, I'm intrigued. I'm intrigued by that. What do you mean by impedance when it comes to room acoustics?
Okay, well, there's a certain impedance of air, okay? You can have...
As in a reluctance of air to move?
Yes, of course. You know,
okay.
There's impedance to any physical object, any molecule that needs to be moved. What it does, basically, they don't fly off. They just bump the next one, okay, when sound waves travel through the air. Or at a certain point, depending on the room dimensions and the way the air molecules hold themselves in a room, at a certain frequency, it crosses over into what's called a ray region, where molecules line up and they bump each other like a ray gun.
Right.
So sound waves go beam. They really beam.
Okay.
Below that, they're kind of all over the place. And below that transition region, there's a wave region where they just act like waves and they just wave out in a spherical field.
So when you say below that point, they behave differently. Are we talking frequency, or are we talking amplitude? Or?
No, it's just their behavior.
Right.
At low frequencies, generally speaking, below,
right,
you know, at the wave in the wave range. It depends on the room dimensions, because that I've got on my room mode calculator. You can download it from my resources page.
Sure.
I've got little sections. You've got the pressure zone, and you got the wave region, and you got the diffusive region, which is kind of a mix between waves and rays, and then you've got the ray region.
Right.
Okay, it's the way they behave.
Okay.
It's grouped that way so that people can better understand how they behave. It is a little bit more complicated than just that, but that simplifies it, and it actually is enough to do a great job. If you study that and understand it, you can sort your own room out.
What are the realistic practicalities of those different frequency ranges? Like what is it that someone who wants to record at home needs to understand about those frequency ranges? Is there a way to simply condense that answer?
Kind of, you know, you could go fall back on the old standard. Everybody's talking about reflection-free zone and live and dead end, which is, to me, it's an ancient technology that works. It was the first one that worked, and everybody's still trying to do it. I don't understand why. Why would you do that when there's so much better ideas out and better ways to accomplish something, and more accurate, in fact.
Is not the idea behind that just to give you more versatility with the room as a recording space?
I digress. I kind of went on with it. It's a pet peeve of mine. I do not like,
okay,
as Dr. Seuss says, I do not like green eggs and ham. I do not like them, Sam I Am. I do not like LEDE or RFC. They are inconsistent, and it's like way all over the map. You got one LEDE room, you go in and you mix, you got to kind of get used to it. You got to play your reference material. You got to screw your head on differently. Then you go to the room next door, same design. It's completely, can I speak freely?
Use of
the
course.
Word I usually
Please
use.
Please do.
It's fucked up, okay?
Right.
It's just fucked up. You can beep that later. You know, there's people buy into bullshit so much, and they follow the logical fallacy of the argument from popularity. Oh, well, so-and-so does it. Must be great.
Right.
You know, right? No. You have to look at the data. You got to look at what actually the results, you know. Now, take, for instance, some people I've worked with, Eddie Kramer.
Yep.
You put him down in a concrete bomb shelter and give him two little speakers and say, mix this record, and he'll come up with the best thing you've ever heard.
Yeah.
Okay? That's the quality. That is the caliber of these guys. These producers, doesn't matter what, they're used to it. They just like deal with it. They got these algorithms they develop in their own, algorithms for their jellyware. You know, that's our brains, okay?
Right.
And it just, boy, it just works, you know, and I can't do that. No freaking way. I can't do that. So I design rooms that I can work in.
Yeah.
I mean, if you've got a commercial studio, and you've got new engineers coming in, you want them to be able to put out the best they can do, possibly.
Yeah.
If you get them a good room, bam, they're going to do good work, you know?
Yeah.
That's a
good room as well as good monitoring, yeah.
Well, correct.
Because monitoring is going to make it or break it.
You know what? Honestly, the worst thing you can put in a mixing room is a speaker, okay? No, I'm serious. I'm serious. Look,
it's
a technology. When did we invent that technology? It's a motor. It's an electromagnetic motor that turns electrical signals into
acoustic signals.
Air vibration.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It's the same shit we've been using for how many years? God, almost 100 years.
But how are you going to mix if you don't have a speaker?
Right. I know. Well, look, materials. I'm half joking, really. But materials have gotten much, much better. But speakers are the elephant in the room. And then the next thing is your mixing desk or the equipment that everything's bouncing off of. And, you know, you get a room just right and you get your speakers in and you got they're okay. You know, they're going to work. Okay.
Yeah.
And everything's, and then you bring a console in and everything's fucked. Then you start putting racks in, and you might as well just go back to the garage, you know?
Yeah.
But, no, I'm just kidding. But
I only mentioned the monitor thing simply because our brains get very used to the sonic fingerprint of a set of monitors that we listen to all the time. And the moment you walk into a room that has different monitoring, and your brain just takes a few minutes to kind of lock into the idiosyncrasies of the monitoring in that room.
Perhaps.
However, don't agree?
Well, if
speak freely. If you disagree, that's fine.
I know people get used to them. You know, like those little Yamaha fuckers. I hate the NS10s. I fucking hate them.
They are pieces of shit.
Now, I designed some microphones some years ago, okay? Little microphones. It's similar to the one I'm using right now.
Yeah.
Okay?
Which we will talk about a little bit later in this episode.
And I told the guy, okay, check this out. And I hooked it up in the booth. It's like a vocal booth with foam on the walls. Horrible place. Anyway, and so I hooked it up in there, and I said, check. And the door was open. I was hearing it from the other room. And I said, wait a minute. What's broken? What's wrong with this? And I walk out of there and walk into where they have the mixer, the control room. And there's those goddamn NS10s on. And I said, oh, shit. No wonder it sounds broken.
It is amazing how many people swear by NS10s, and I'm the same. I've listened to them and think they sound horrible.
Well, they do. They do. They bring out the mid-range, okay?
Yeah.
They're your typical, like Mark Mozart says in his class for mixing. He did a thing on Facebook called Your Mix Sucks, and it's a book he wrote, and he teaches mixing. It's very good. It's very, very good. But it's a typical kitchen radio, like Mark mentions.
Right.
And you do need a kitchen radio speaker to get your blend. And the NS10s, I have to admit, they are good for blending. You get your blend. Why not use something a little more accurate, like the Mix Cubes, you know, the R-tones or the, yep, what are the new Evan tones, whatever. It's fine. I found some computer speakers, the JBL single speaker with a little whizzer cone. They didn't have it wasn't anything special. It was just a little oval speaker.
Yep.
Stuffed it with fiberglass and put it up there. And that was my kitchen radio speaker.
Your reference.
And it worked great.
Yeah,
I got my blends, and then I popped it up to the HD1s, the Meyers, and then I could just work it. And those are my little near fields that I had at the time.
Yeah, right.
You want something accurate. You don't want anything to lie to you. You want it to be as flat as possible.
Yep.
And if it's flat, if it's right, it's right. And if your room is right, it will be right everywhere.
Yeah.
If your room has too much bass or it's boomy, then your mixes will be thin.
Yes.
And vice versa. Vice versa. If your room is thin, your mixes will have too much bass.
Yeah.
So, you know, if you got some nulls, a bunch of nulls in your room, you're going to EQ that so it sounds good to you.
Yep.
See? It's like color grading on a broken CRT monitor. Your red gun is not firing right, so everything kind of has a blue tint to it. So you're doing these color grading and
trying to compensate. Yeah.
And you're fucked.
Yeah. So in terms of room nodes, I'm assuming you have a room node calculator that people can access?
Room mode. Now, a node and an antinode, those are points on a waveform. Okay.
Yes. Yep.
I'm just saying this for you, not for you, for your audience. Okay. A mode is a resonant frequency of of two surfaces or the air in an enclosure.
And right.
Those are modes. A modal activity is you've got your axial modes where you have parallel walls reflecting off of them. You're going to have three of those.
Standing
height,
wave.
Width, and depth.
Yep.
Uh-huh. And then you have the tangential, which is it hits four surfaces of the room.
Mm-hmm.
And then the oblique mode is where it hits all six surfaces going around the room like that.
Right.
And each consecutive, you know, where it hits more surfaces, the level of those resonances is much lower than the axial. So your axials are your main ones. And you don't want to have an axial and a tangential close to each other.
Right.
If an oblique and an axial are close, it's like, meh, it's probably not going to affect much. So use the remote calculators. I put so much stuff on my resources page. I'm really big at sharing. I think that we should all share more.
For sure.
I do not hold anything close to the chest. I don't.
Well, that's kind of why I started this podcast.
Yeah. If we share.
Share what I know.
Yeah. If we share, we'll learn. It's the only way I know what I know is somebody shared it with me.
Yeah.
And ever so often we'll come up with not really an original idea, but we can put two and two together and come up with an idea that somebody hasn't quite come up with yet. And the more shoulders we stand on, the further we could see.
Yeah.
So hopefully others will, you know, take that and run with it. Yeah.
Okay. So just to come back to the idea of room modes.
Okay.
If somebody uses a room mode calculator and they work out that, you know, for their particular room, you know, they've got some lumpiness around 100 hertz to 200 hertz. What are the best ways of compensating for that? What's the best approach to balance those lumpy bits out so that the frequency response of the room is closer to flat? I'm not assuming they'll necessarily get it perfectly flat, but how can they get it closer to flat?
Trap the shit out of it.
Right.
Best you can do. Okay, number one. First things first, okay. Your dimensions, your room dimensions, your basic room dimensions will set your modal activity.
Yes.
As well as the mass of each partition. If the mass is very heavy, you're going to need membrane traps to really trap those heavy and very hard, very strong axial modes. You must.
Right.
However, at the same time, you have to keep all the surfaces broadband treatment, or any reflections you have to reflective areas. The way I do it, okay, if you look at some of my designs, there are slats here and there and sometimes everywhere, it seems like. But form follows function, and there's a function to everything. And you don't want reflections where you don't want them. And you do where you do, but you don't want those reflections very high level. You want to keep them pretty low level, just enough so that we have a sense that there's a surface there. There's a wall there. That's
right.
All. That we just need a vague sense of it. And then it's not going to interfere with our judgment call as to what's coming out of the speakers, what we're listening, what's on tape, what's on the track.
Right.
We can judge it appropriately. We don't have reverb in our room. We don't work in an ambient field. It's impossible. It's just impossible to work in an ambient field. And people talk about liveness in a control room. There should be zero liveness,
right,
in a control room. Really, unless the tracking room is huge, there shouldn't be any liveness in there either.
Right.
You know, they call it a live room, but that comes from live performance, not.
Not live ambience, yeah.
Right, correct,
yeah.
Yes. So I got that off my chest. Now, go on, I'm sorry.
If someone doesn't have tens of thousands of dollars to spend in their room, if they do need to do it on the cheap, do you have any best practices that you recommend?
Save your money.
Until you've got money to spend.
Look, you know, life is short. And then you die. It's fact. It is. You got to look. We do this because we love it. This is our life. This
yep.
is what we do. Music is music. The music business, all of it, is my life, and I love it. I live for it every day. But if you're going to do something, do it. You know, I'm not religious, but I remember this. What is it? A proverb of Solomon says, "Whatsoever thou doest, do it with thy might."
Right.
For there is no purpose or device or knowledge in the grave whither thou goest.
Right. Yeah.
So you know, if you're going to do something, do it.
Yeah.
But think, be wise. Don't risk your family. Don't risk your life. Don't risk your savings. Just take it easy. Take your time with it. But if you're going to do something, man, whatever you put into it, make sure that you can add to it or use this later again and whatnot. I have a lot of clients that'll start, and they'll start with a good design, and they'll say, okay, I can only do the structure right now. I said, good, good. Pull some panels in there, get some work, get to work, make some money, and then put up some more and keep adding to it. My design criteria is balanced non-environment, which is following one of my mentors, Tom Hidley. Both Tom Hidley and Philip Newell and a few others, Stan Toyoshima, do NE design, non-environment. And
so what do you mean by non-environment?
Check out Tom Hidley and Philip Newell, Sam Toyoshima. That's what they do.
Okay.
It's a non-environment. It's like a non-environment. It's going in to an anechoic chamber and mixing, okay?
Right.
Which is a lot of people find very difficult to operate in such an environment. They're okay for machines, but not for humans.
Yeah,
okay.
Right.
And in my paper, it's on my website, on my resources page, you can download it.
Yeah.
I talk about the non-environment and why I also don't do that, but we have to balance it out. It's a compromise. Life is a compromise. We have to live, we have to survive, you know, et cetera.
Yeah.
Strive for our freedom. But we have to understand our origins. Who we are, you know, we are mammal primates. We evolved on this planet, and we do not like not knowing what's around us, okay? It's very stressful because then the survival instinct kicks in, and we get stressed, we get fatigued. You ever been in a non-environment room for very long? After about 40 minutes, you go, shit, I got to go out for, give me a smoke. I got to get a coffee. I got to walk. Oh, got to get some fresh air.
Yeah, right.
You know? Because the primitive parts of our brains are just getting stressed out. Okay, that's the problem I've seen. Okay, so I correct
I have
that.
I have to admit, I've been in two separate anechoic chambers, but sadly never for that period of time. I've only ever been in them for about 2 to 3 minutes. And I have to, I have to say, I absolutely loved it. But
it is fun.
Yeah.
At first.
Right.
Wait till the animal comes out. You know, they come in. And, you start like, I think I'm having trouble breathing.
Yeah, right.
You know, it's just a natural response. It's just like something you really can't control almost.
Wow.
Some people are okay with it. They are, it, you know, some people are okay with it. That's fine. Most people, however, are not. So I put reflectors in the rooms to a certain degree, like the diffusers that I use on the back wall. They're prime. I start with prime 523, not prime 7, but 523. Okay, the corner traps, I have a diffsorber that has a prime 19. And by the way, they are primitive root diffusers and not quadratic.
Okay, you've completely lost me now. What's with the numbers?
Okay. It's a math sequence, okay?
Okay?
Prime numbers are only divisible by one and
themselves. Yeah.
And this is also how I design rooms. I use prime numbers.
Right.
Length, width, and height. When we're building from scratch, I go prime because it's fucking work.
You're right.
It's so easy. You know, I'm serious, though. It makes my job easy because then I get an excellent room dimension, and then the treatment just works. It rocks, you know. And
yeah, right.
People think I'm just a genius. No, it's just fucking prime numbers. It's not that hard, you know.
Yeah.
That actually makes a lot of sense.
I'd never considered that, but yes, each mode of the room along the three axes will not have multiples that will interact with each other because they're all prime.
No coincidence.
Nice.
Correct. Yeah. And what you're looking for is an equal balance where you can see those modes line up on a chart, and they're just a line of vertical lines, just nice, smooth, bunch of even spaced lines. And that is nice because what happens in a room, if you're in an anechoic chamber, you're not going to have any modes. I mean, it's like gone, forget it. You know, don't worry about it.
Yeah.
But when you have, you're trying to be, you have to compromise somewhere. You know, we've got this much space, and I can only afford this much room for treatment, right?
Yeah.
I still have a lot of people complaining that I use so much room for treatment. And man, it's physics, man. You can't, there's only so far you can go, but the compromise we make is enough and it's adequate. So what I'm saying is, when you design the treatment, you don't have to use it, have such deep treatment as they would in an NE room. And you can still, what I was saying is that the modal distribution, you want a good, even and broad spread, where it's nice and even all the way through the spectrum, because those modes actually support the sound that you hear. For example, you get somebody with little speakers and they're working in a bedroom that's not treated at all. And then they put treatment up and say, man, I'm clipping my speakers. I said, well, how loud are you playing it? You know, but people experience that they need a lot more power when they got proper treatment. And it's true because the level is not, if you're in an ambient field, the level is the same as everywhere. Doesn't matter where you go, you got that same level. So you might as well have the speakers on your ears like headphones in a non-treated room. As soon as you get the room properly treated, sound begins to fall off as in a free field.
Right. You know,
6 dB per doubling of distance. Okay, yep. So you can move back to the back of the room and it's a lot quieter.
Yeah.
And so, you know, anytime you have absorption, you lose energy. It's taking the energy out of the room.
Yep.
You know? So you may have one or two bounces off the walls as far as the modes are concerned. If it's a big room, then the modes are low frequency, very low frequency, and you need some serious membrane traps to get them. But sometimes not, because if the density of your partitions are not so heavy, those deep modes will just, well, they won't happen because those frequencies will just pass through.
Right.
But there goes your support as well. It's a compromise. Any which way you go, it's still a compromise. Serious. So in a lossy room, you need more sub. You need more low-end reinforcement. In a concrete room, you need good base trapping and membrane traps to absorb it down to a certain point. And then you can get a pretty smooth frequency response without too much power.
Right.
So it's trade-off here and there. Yeah. Oh, another point.
Yeah.
Subs or ported speakers in small rooms. You expect them to, the literature says that they go down to, let's say 30 hertz, okay? Mm-hmm. But the pressure zone in your room starts at 45. What do you do? Your speaker's not going to work below 45 because if it's ported, the speaker becomes a dipole. It's pushing and pulling at the same time and it can't create pressure. It just kind of moves the air back and forth in front of the speaker.
Right.
Do you see what I mean? Can you visualize that? Okay. That's what happens in smaller rooms. And people get subs and they're having trouble because they get real peaky and dippy and weird if they're ported. So best thing to do is, if you have a small room, get a non-ported sub.
Yeah.
And then it'll drive the pressure zone, just like the earphones I'm using now. They're earbuds.
Yeah.
They got wonderful bass. They work in the pressure zone. Everything's pressure zone.
Yeah. Now, I was going to ask you about the microphone. You mentioned it 15 minutes ago. And I went and watched the entire 10-part YouTube video series that you created on this. And I'm just astounded at the way you built this thing. Do you want to talk everyone through it just briefly?
I suppose I could, yeah. You have my sympathy for watching all that.
Mate, it was very well done. I thought you did a great job on the video. I don't have the patience to reset the camera for every aspect of trying to put something like that together. So,
well, obviously, neither did I. Anyway.
So what inspired you to try and build your own microphone?
Oh, I've always built stuff like this for a very long time, since the 70s, seriously.
Right.
But I saw an article some years ago. Well, it's called the Linkwitz Mod to the Panasonic capsule.
Right.
Which I've done ever since I've found that. It's great. Lowers the noise. It allows a higher SPL on that little electric capsule. And then I power it. I just simply passively power it with a 9-volt battery and current limit.
Yeah, right.
It with a resistor and feed it into what I do is I do a an impedance balanced output and shabam, it just works. It's great.
Yeah, nice. Well, I would highly recommend for anyone that's listening to this podcast, go and check out John's YouTube channel and watch that 10-part series on building your own microphone, because I just sat there and went, wow, this is so cool. Not sure that I'm quite ready to go there myself yet, but I was very impressed by it anyway.
Yeah, you could get the, I think they've got capsules. Who is it, JLI Electronics or something? I have to look it up. But they're making the same capsules, so you can buy them. They're not so rare as they used to be.
Right.
And you could just try it. I mean, shoot, a couple of bucks, man. You know, if you break it, what the heck, get another one. Yeah, you know, I did that series mainly because my daughter was wanting to get into voice acting.
Oh, okay.
And I made her one and sent the one that I made in the video, I sent to her. So
right.
And she's using it now.
It's, fantastic.
It's pretty good. Yeah.
That's awesome.
So it's a good starter. And if we got a second, if we have 1 second, I want to say this about the optimizing your room. And you have rooms, a room, and you got peaks and dips here and there.
Yeah.
If you could calculate the room and you see you have some modal resonance issues, if you can change a wall, it's best. It's really the only way to fix it. Treatment will not fix modal issues. So that's kind of a word of warning to anyone trying to do a home studio in a room that is not ideal, like a cube, 10 by 10 by 10 or 8 by 8 by 8 or 8 by 8 by 10 or whatever. Anything that has a common denominator, no, don't do
right.
it. Because you're going to have problems and you can't fix it. And you'll be throwing good money after bad.
And I guess that's where, you know, I suppose if you did build up enough trapping to actually alter the dimensions of the interior of the room, you might make a little bit of headway. Would that be correct or not?
No.
No?
No. No, no, right. not. You're going to change the resonance slightly. You're going to lower the resonance, but they're all going to follow. They'll all follow. If you filled the room with fiber, I did an article about fiber and the speed of sound through fiber, okay?
Oh, okay.
If you filled the room with fiber, it would just change all the modes down just a little bit lower, and they'd still be uniformly coincidental.
Oh, is that right?
It's not going to help you.
Wow.
Yeah, it's not going to help you. No, treatment can't fix it. You have to fix. It's like designing a race car with square wheels.
Okay.
Okay. Or building the house in Lemony Snicket's, you know, a series of unfortunate events on the cliff there, you know.
Yeah.
Don't do it. Okay.
Awesome.
Okay.
Well, John, I have to say thank you very much for giving up your Sunday morning to chat with us.
You're welcome.
And really, anytime. Really appreciate the conversation. And we will put links to your YouTube channel as well as your website and your resources page. So anyone can go and check out all of the information that you have shared. If people want to touch base with you, is there a preferred method of...
Just email.
Just email?
Just send me an email.
Okay.
Yeah, just send me an email.
Okay.
It's all on my website. Just send me an email.
Fantastic. Awesome, mate. Well, thank you so much for your time. I really appreciate it.
You're very welcome.
All right, mate.
All right.
See ya.
Okay, cheers. See ya. Bye-bye.
Sign Language. Another audiotoyou.com quality podcast. For questions, comments, and feedback, email theboys@signlanguagepodcast.com.